Chris and I are so excited to be back. Because we actually did the thing that we said that we were going to do and waited 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Since the last time we've been here. But as always, we are the real thing on morelikeradio.com. Exclusively on morelikeradio.com. It is May 30th, 2017. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Chris White. Chris White, how are you?
Shut the fuck up, Maddie.
Thank you. Thank you, Walter. I really have to be a thing with you. So yeah, we are the real thing. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. It is RELTHINGMLR on morelikeradio.com. And Chris, happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day to you.
Yes. Did you have any family members that served and died in service?
Yep. Well, died in service. No. But my dad was in the Navy. My grandfather was in the service as well in Korea. So yes, not died, but certainly proud of all those guys that did. Happy for their sacrifice.
Of course. And then of, you know, the thing where we were talking about last show is that the summer movie season, quote unquote, has started to get introduced a lot sooner.
It's creeping.
Within the year. Because normally what would have been done, it would have been on Memorial Day weekend.
Right.
That's when the summer movie season would have officially started and moved up to the beginning of May. Now it's in April, practically March, et cetera, et cetera. And so when we talk about the numbers for this past Memorial Day weekend, your number one movie was Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales,
yeah.
With $62 million for the weekend, $77 million for the cumulative four-day weekend, which would have included yesterday, Monday, as well as Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, not good. Not good. Not what they wanted, no doubt. You know, is anybody surprised? Like, I guess this kind of movie can still make a lot of money overseas, and it can still have, you know, legs as far as people, families wanting to go see it in the next week or two, but
right.
I don't know. There's a lot of shit coming out, Wonder Woman and whatnot. It's hard for me to believe this movie's going to be seen as a success when we look back a year from now.
I'll tell you success. Still holding up, still with legs, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 with $20
million. Yeah.
Cumulative $334 million.
And maybe that's part of the problem with Pirates. Like you said, it used to be the summer movie season started at Memorial Day. And now, I mean, it started 2 months ago with Logan and all this kind of stuff. And that Guardians of the Galaxy a couple weeks ago. By the time we get to Memorial Day, we're like, you gotta bring it if you want us to go see this movie. And I just don't think anybody cares about Pirates movies anymore.
I've seen a couple people that have posted about, you know, being all into the new Pirates movie, but then again, they're also the same people that are vested into anything Disney related.
Yeah.
Like, they would go see Cars 3 if they were given the chance today to go see it over at the movie theater and pay cash money for it.
Did you see any of the Pirates movies?
I saw the first one.
Yeah. So you didn't see any of the sequels?
No.
I mean, I saw the first sequel, so I saw the second one. I didn't see the third one, I didn't see the fourth one, and it looks like I'm probably not going to see the fifth one. I would have been dragged to it by my family if they were so inclined,
yeah.
But nobody gave a shit. My wife, who loved my the
wife.
First movie, my wife, who loved the first movie,
if you were so inclined,
no interest.
So inclined, or Kevin Kline, as you as you were, you know, dragged over.
Yeah, but no, nobody wants to see it. I'm certainly not going to be the one to start that caravan up. I don't care.
Well, listen, as we round out top three, top five,
sure.
Baywatch, kind of dead on arrival. It only made $23 million, it only made $18 million for the weekend, $23 million for the 4 day, but that was when you and I were kind of like, this is probably going to make some money, like 21, 22 Jump Street, reboots, like even like A Man from U.N.C.L.E., like was, you know.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
And we could not have been more wrong on that one. Like, because I actually thought it was going to be funny and make money.
Yeah.
And I was way off.
Yeah.
Because it clearly didn't make any money, and by all accounts, it's not funny. Having said that, you know, comedies, it depends when you see it, at what time, but, I mean, everybody says the same stuff. Like, even The Rock can't save this movie. Even his, you know,
charisma
and his movie star wattage, like
just
like you said, dead on arrival.
Right.
I haven't heard a single good thing said about this movie.
Neither have I. That's the whole reason why I'm
very
just,
shocking.
I will wait until it arrives on DVD or streaming or that type of thing. Number four, Alien Covenant, $10 million, cumulative total of $57 million, then rounding out the top five. Everything.
Yeah. Alien Covenant, though, we got to go back, and we'll deep dive into this movie anyway, because we both saw it.
Yes.
But it had an 80% drop-off from its first week. 80%! I mean, that says everything you need to know about a sequel like that. And I guarantee you Pirates is going to have that kind of, not 80%, but it's going to have a huge drop-off. That's what you're seeing with these sequels and prequels and remakes and stuff, is you get your opening weekend, but then it's really more about that second weekend. Like Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, doesn't have a drop-off like that, so it continues to make money. It doesn't matter if it doesn't break records on opening weekend, as long as it continues to make money.
Right. Well, since you brought it up, as far as the top-grossing Memorial Day weekend debuts, what is the number one?
Top-grossing Memorial Weekend debut. So not necessarily a part one or a part two or part three. It's just like the movies that were the biggest on Memorial Day weekend.
That opened Memorial Day weekend that made the most money that particular weekend.
Christ, I don't remember exactly what month everything came out. I don't fucking... What was... Jurassic World a Memorial Day movie?
No. The Lost World, you said?
No, Jurassic World.
Jurassic World was not. That came out the beginning of May last year.
Okay.
But Lost World was...
Lost World was a Memorial Day?
Yes, it was. And it was actually the... It is, as of right now, the number seven debut. Yeah. 90 million. Yeah, and that was from way, way back.
So what is the number one Memorial Day weekend movie of all time?
With $139.8 million, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. Guess what number two is? Number two.
I'm guessing it's a goddamn pirate movie.
No, but it involves Nazis. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Oof. Memorial Day.
$126 million. Number three, X-Men The Last Stand, $122 million. Mm-hmm. Fast and Furious.
Pretty bad. Like, the worst of every series so far. Like, the worst Pirates movie, the worst Indiana Jones movie, the worst... That was the Ratner one, right? Last Stand. That was part three.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely the worst.
Look. This one, Pirates 5. Okay, it's Pirates 5.
Just call it Pirates 5, by the way. I can't deal with all your dead man's chest, end of the world. What's this new one called? The World's End.
Dead men.
Don't wear plaid.
Take it in the tail. It didn't even break the top ten. Here's your top ten. Your top ten is Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. Crystal Skull. Nuke the Fridge. Hashtag Nuke the Fridge, baby. X-Men: The Last Stand. Fast and Furious 6. X-Men: Days of Future
Past. My language here.
X-Men: Days of Future Past.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Hangover Part 2.
Ugh.
Lost World Jurassic Park. You'll notice that this movie, Lost World Jurassic Park, came out in 97, and it's still holding on strong, even after it's been out 20 fucking years.
Lost World is 20 fucking years old. Wow.
Behind Lost World, Day After Tomorrow, which is the only technical original piece in this whole thing. Oh, I'm sorry, Bruce Almighty. Bruce Almighty, remember Bruce Almighty?
Yeah.
And X-Men Apocalypse. X-Men love Memorial Day weekend, apparently.
X-Men and Pirates. Holy crap.
Baywatch, in its debut for, you know, this past weekend, $23 million. Do you know what it is right behind? I kid you not, and I will show this to you right now.
What? 21 Jump Street.
Alien 3.
Oh, Alien 3!
Yeah.
Holy shit, we're going back to what, 1993 whatever that was?
92.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. Alien 3.
Alien 3, man.
Baywatch didn't do as well as Alien 3. That's funny.
I mean, it's just barely within the top 50 as far as Memorial debuts, so, I mean, we have to wait until next year. But rounding out the top 50, George P. Cosmatos's critically acclaimed Cobra.
Cobra.
You're the disease. I'm the cure. Shit, if I can drop my mic.
Pull the fucking Cobra on your microphone.
Yeah, I know, right? I just need the the matchstick in my mouth. But
talked by Alien 3 making $23 million. Freaking 92? That was a fucking haul. Man.
Well, look, I read an article about, because we're gonna get into Alien Covenant, by the way. And so spoilers. But I was looking at the debuts for the Alien series. Right, and you've already mentioned, it's a record 71% Memorial Day drop.
Yeah, 71, okay.
Yeah, so there's also, the fact that, okay, look, if your highest grossing Alien movie debuted with $50 million, that would be Prometheus from last year, right?
Yeah, it's technically not an Alien movie, but all
right. It's, it's enough, I guess. I mean, especially when you've got, and I'm scrolling. Where the hell is it at? I mean, you've got Alien here, and I want to say that I fucking found it.
When you get back to Alien and Aliens, you don't have those kind of big opening weekends. But I'm sure Aliens had a big opening weekend for 1986. But it's not, you know, for a movie to make, you know, $25 million in an opening weekend at that time, I was like, holy shit, this is like the biggest movie of all time.
Right.
You know, I mean, like Jurassic Park or the original, I think made like $50 million opening weekend. That's right. Capital One.
We are not sponsored by Capital One. We are sponsored by the More Like Radio.com.
Speaking of money.
So let's talk about Alien Covenant. So Alien Covenant. You saw it with who? By yourself?
By myself.
Yeah.
Saw it like midday. It's a good way to judge how good a movie is. Because it's really, you know, you don't have the crowd support. Like, there's nobody there.
Yeah.
You don't have anybody, like, munching popcorn in your ear. I wasn't with anybody. There's no distractions whatsoever. I'm a fan. I'm coming in, you know, like, I'm your best possible audience member.
Okay.
I love these movies. I'm going to see it no matter what. No matter what the reviews say, like, I'm there.
You're loyal to the bitter end.
Yeah.
To the far reaches of space.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they could probably make 5 more, and I would still be able to say the same thing. All
right.
Yeah. So, best possible scenario for me. What circumstances did you see this movie under?
We saw it, I want to say it was right before my surgery. It was Tuesday afternoon.
Oh, okay.
It's like 1:00 in the afternoon. I think it was like one of the first showings. It's like one of those where you don't need to worry about finding a seat because there's going to be plenty of seats. So you go grab a burger and a beer, and then you like walk in, and the previews are just wrapping up.
Yeah.
And then you actually are able to sit down. Movie starts.
I didn't see it opening day, but I saw it opening week. It was probably like the 5th or 6th day of
opening,
release.
Yeah, opening full.
Like that. Yeah.
Same for me.
And there was like a total of, I would say there was less than 10 people. I think there was probably 6 or 7 people in there.
First thing I will say about this movie, it is very pretty to look at.
Oh, yeah.
It is gorgeous.
Yep.
Take any still from this movie, put it on a wall, and somebody would probably say that you've got like, wow, you've got really excellent taste. This is an Ansel Adams piece, blah, blah, blah.
No doubt. I mean, Ridley Scott has always been a visual director. Even his movies that, you know, I mean, you really tear them apart and break them down. They're not as great as they're sometimes given credit for being. Like Blade Runner, you know, pops into mind.
Sure.
But it's gorgeous.
And this is the sequel to Prometheus, which is a prequel to Alien.
Yes, yeah, so this movie takes place between Prometheus and Alien.
And we are supposed to get one more movie before Alien to make up, right?
Doubt it.
Well, shit, man, I don't know. Like, he's doing some sort of, like, sci-fi show special thing with TNT. He's doing a Blade Runner. He's got another 2 movies that he was talking about.
Well, he's producing Blade Runner.
Pushing 80 years old, 84 years old, however old he is.
Yeah, but I mean, bottom line, this movie didn't make a lot of money.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess it could still... I heard it didn't cost that much. It was like $100
million. $100
million. So...
It'll make it back.
It'll make it back with foreign markets and stuff. Maybe they'll make a sequel, but geez, when you're getting... From a studio's point of view, I would think that they're going to say, okay, Prometheus made X.
Yeah.
Alien Covenant made X minus 200, or whatever it's going to end up being.
Right.
I feel like they're going to be like, oof, I don't know.
But it made... But it'll make enough with the international market and the domestic market and DVDs and everything. You would think, though, right?
I'd like to see what happens. I'm curious.
Yeah.
So you tell me.
Give me your thoughts. Because, I mean,
So quick, like, rundown of the premise of the movie. As you said, it takes place after Prometheus.
Yes.
And before Alien, the original Alien.
Right.
And basically what happens is we start off with, like, this... you know, planet, what do they call it? Terraforming.
Yeah, colonization.
Colonization mission made up of a bunch of couples. By the way, Franco, supposed to be the captain of the ship, you literally never see him in the movie. You only saw him in the...
Barely.
Movie. Well, I mean, you see, like, him, like...
Why bother?
Yeah.
Why bother even getting the fuck up, Franco?
So Franco plays the captain of the ship, and he was in some of the marketing, like, short films that sort of came out before this movie, but he's not in the actual movie for the most part. You see him, but you don't really... He certainly doesn't have any lines. You just kind of see him...
Which I'll say, it's a clever bait and switch, especially since, you know, you were thinking something was going to be, like, all hammy with him and Danny McBride, who's also in this movie.
Exactly. So it's like a colony mission made up of a bunch of couples. I would say, you know, what, 20 people, 10 couples. You know, some of them are main characters, or some of them are sort of red shirts. And there's a tragedy that strikes and sort of throws them off course, and they end up, oh, what do you know? There's another planet way closer than the planet we were going to, which looks like it might be good for what we're trying to do, which is set up a new Earth,
which the only reason that they would ever find out about it was because there's a John Denver song that's being used as a distress call, and...
As has happened in previous Alien movies.
Jesus fucking Christ, Ridley Scott. Here's problem number one that I have. I don't know whatever happened in his private life, but apparently he did not listen to his auntie or his mama or something, and the female that does not get paid attention to, like happened in Alien, we're not letting this pathogen, this contagion, on this ship. We're not going to this fucking planet. Maybe we should stop doing the thing. No, we're just going to keep it. Why? Why did we not listen to you after everyone's getting killed?
So this is where the movie gets into trouble. This is where the characters get into trouble, and the script, you know, the sort of crux of the storyline sort of gets kicked into gear.
Yeah.
But it's also where the movie gets into trouble, and it's the same kind of stuff that sort of got Prometheus into trouble with me, which is the characters start doing things that are just flat-out stupid. They don't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, they did it all the time in Prometheus. They're like, they get on this planet, and they're in full-on spaceships and ships, and you know, they get some reading that says the air is breathable, and they're like, fuck it, I'm taking my helmet off. Like, there's no scientific test. Like, they don't shove a chimpanzee out the door or something and see if its eyes pop out of its head. No, they just start popping their helmets off. It's like very, it doesn't seem at all credible, and it doesn't seem like something that smart people or even dumb people would do.
Or just even savvy people, because it seems like some of the people on the ship, which include Billy Crudup, which include Danny McBride, which includes Catherine Watterson, which I didn't know who or where she was from. Like, I just know her as...
I'll get into her in a minute.
The naked chick from Inherent Vice.
Yes.
Okay, sure. Thank you, Mr. Skin. So I'm watching this movie, and again, I'm taking in the context of, okay, clearly they know about popular culture because they mentioned John Denver. There's your barometer,
which,
right
by
there.
The way, that song would be hundreds of years old at this point.
Right,
but that's the song that, like, Take Me Home, Country Roads. What song do you know that is 200 years old? You know, I mean, it's like Happy Birthday or something like that.
The fucking Star Spangled Banner,
I guess? Yeah, the Star Spangled Banner. In 200 years from now, maybe some random guy will recognize a song from our age. But will it be Take Me Home, Country? Like, to hear, like, a six-second grainy, like, transmission of it from hundreds and thousands of miles away. He's like, that's Take Me Home, Country Roads. I know every John Denver song there is. Don't fuck with me when it comes to John Denver.
I never had anything by the...
Fuck? That's like me being, like, an expert on Francis Scott Key. Like, I know every Francis Scott Key composition that was ever made.
I never used to own anything by the Oak Ridge Boys. Now I own everything by them. No, but no, seriously, okay, so we're taking that logic, that concept, so, okay, fine, you're referring back to a 200-year-old John Denver song,
sure, fine,
but that also means that you're watching popular TV and television and movies, Chris, and if you were going by just popular culture where, hey, the thing that I saw in the television show or the movie where they just got all their shit wrecked, and they clearly died because they weren't paying attention in the Alien movie, the sci-fi movie, maybe we shouldn't do that. Now, and I'm just going to take off the helmet while the spore flies into my fucking head, up my nostril.
This is what I mean. Like, this movie has examples of characters doing things that not only don't make sense, they're just dumb.
Yeah.
No person would do them. So they get they'd find a planet that is, you know, possibly hospitable in the way that Earth would be, or the other planet, and it's going to save them, you know, a couple years, I forget what they say,
seven and a half
years off of their trip, you know, and these guys are in space for years and years, and so they're willing to give it a shot. So they go down there, again,
space helmets, but again, they're being told by Catherine Watterson, maybe we should just, you know, keep on course.
Let's stay the course, we've vetted this other place we're going to, we know that it's safe, we know that it's, you know, hospitable.
Right.
Nobody listens, they do stupid shit, and they go there.
Yeah.
Next stupid move.
Okay.
Basically, everybody gets off the spaceship and goes down there.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you send a party of, I don't know, three people down there? Now, they send a party of, like, fucking 14 people down there, and they leave two people on the big spaceship.
Well, the other thing that I'm thinking, too, is that, okay, so I'm looking at the movie, cost $100 million, right?
Yeah.
And I'm always just completely in awe. Happy, good, positive thing that I want to say about Alien Covenant is that for the amount of money that they spend on these movies, it really looks like they go balls to the wall when it comes to like all the technological shit.
It even, looks like a $250 million movie.
Of course, yeah. Even when you're going back and you're looking at Alien, for example, the original, like that, just mind-blowingly, like wow, that's so fucking like futuristic and cool. Even
and that's
in 79,
probably a testament to Ridley Scott because he has a long, rich history of doing that, and he's been doing this for a long time, and you know he runs a tight ship and so on and so forth. The movie looks like a $250 million movie.
But if you were so concerned about the colonists making it there, and you've got this crew and all that sort of thing, you've already got one synthetic,
right.
Walter, who is Michael Fassbender's new android character in this movie, and we'll also get to, you know, his other counterpart.
Same actor that played David in Prometheus, of course, Michael Fassbender, who we all know and love, plays an American android in this movie, or one with an American accent, anyway.
As I read, it was he sounds like what someone would think an American broadcaster would sound like if you were to put
sound
to an actual picture.
It's
so,
a little stiff.
But if you were going to have this mission, why not just make some more androids?
Sure.
Just send them out there.
Get Walter out there.
Yeah,
Walter? It has nothing to do with Vietnam.
The first hour, again, I go back to this whole thing where, and again,
I'm fine with slow burn. You're fine with slow burn. It's not about it being a slow burn, which it is.
It's kind of graining, though. Okay,
it
look.
It is.
It's just, I'm just so, it, look, I can't remember where I read it from or what it was alluding to. I think it was some comment that was made about a superhero movie or this or that, and someone said what most of us usually think on The Real Thing and More Like Radio.com is that you don't need backstory anymore.
No.
So this is what I did after I was done watching Alien Covenant. I went back and I was like, okay, maybe I gave Prometheus too hard of a time. Let me watch it again.
Right.
Who's the stupid person that did the stupid thing one more time?
Who's
me.
The big winner
Who's,
tonight?
Mikey's the big winner. Mikey wins, yeah. So I watched that. I also watched Alien Resurrection back to back.
Oh, hell yeah.
Alien Resurrection is so much goddamn
People
fun.
People give that movie so much shit.
Dude.
I'm telling you, it comes out of the fucking gate.
No.
And it's fun.
It's really fucking good. It's 2 hours.
It's got some silly stuff in it.
Yeah.
But it's entertaining.
Yeah.
It knows how to entertain. You bring this up at the exact right time.
Yeah.
Because when they're going from the big spaceship down to the planet, it's like an 8-minute sequence of basically just like gears moving on the ship and them taking off and them... We've seen this before.
Space porn.
This is not doing anything for us. I know. I understand for a director, it's very important for you to make this look as real as possible and for it to have this like visceral quality of what it's like for a spaceship to shit out another spaceship onto a planet.
Right.
We don't care.
Right.
It's boring. And it goes on forever. They finally get there. Some more stupid decisions start taking place.
Yeah.
People start like... You know, they step on these spores. One guy steps on the spores. Okay, fine. No big deal. Watch where you're stepping, idiot. Another guy basically, like, walks up to one and pops it like a zit and then, like, sort of wafts the fucking spores into his face like Kevin Costner smoking the pipe and Dances with Wolves. Like
Tatanka?
Like, fucking takes a hit off this thing like a fucking Cheech and Chong movie. And it's like, well, what could happen here? Like, scientist? Like, you're fucking... sucking on this space spore.
Weyland Yutani up in smoke.
God damn.
Yeah.
Stupid decision.
Yeah.
And then they're like, they start splitting up, which I guess that kind of makes sense. If you're going to drop 14 people off, maybe split up. One thing leads to another, and guess what?
Yeah.
The spores make fucking aliens come out of you. And, you know, this is when the movie turns into a horror movie. It's about halfway through that it turns into a horror movie. Before this, it's all space tragedy and James Franco getting burned alive and shit like that.
But look, he's not even in the movie long enough for me to feel bad for him dying.
No, you don't care.
Like,
you have no... And that's kind of the point, I
think. Like, squinting my eyes and pointing at the screen. Is that James Franco?
Is that Franco?
Yeah.
Squinting your eyes all Franco-esque.
Just fucking smiling and squinting.
Yeah. No, yeah, you don't. And maybe that's the point, because they do want you to sort of invest in the Billy Crudup character, because the movie has an agenda.
Right.
It's not just an alien movie. And this is my other problem. My number one problem is that people make stupid decisions. My number two problem is it doesn't know what kind of movie it wants to be.
Okay.
And that, I have to credit Ridley Scott for making a beautiful $100 million movie that looks like a $200 million movie, but I have to blame Ridley Scott and the scriptwriters for not knowing what kind of movie they wanted to make here. Because they're doing this whole thing, which they kind of touched on in Prometheus, and they bring it back in this one, which is basically a contemplation about what it's like to have been created versus were we not created? Is it all random? It's like kind of a creationism versus evolution type conversation that's happening here. And the movies, neither one of them takes a position on that. It just wants to sort of start a conversation about that idea.
Meet your maker. Here's a movie it talks about.
Meet your maker, and what's it like to be made? What's it like to be among your maker? And this is interesting stuff.
Yeah.
This movie contains some interesting bits.
Right.
Which brings us to...
Bits.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't all work as a whole. It's got little pieces where it's extremely entertaining as a sort of philosophical movie about, what it's like to be human and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So you get some interesting scenes with, when they're there and aliens start popping out, you start breathing spores, aliens start popping out, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They get rescued by who? David.
Of course.
Who is the android from Prometheus. Turns out they crash landed, or did they, on this planet, along with Dr. Elizabeth Shaw, who is played by Naomi Rapace, who we all know from the original Girl with Dragon Tattoo movies.
Squid Baby.
She's Squid Baby. She's not in this movie, but David is. And he's an upright, walking android again. He was all ripped apart in Prometheus, but not anymore.
When he shows up, then you have my attention.
You have my attention, number one, because it's Michael Fassbender, and he's just fucking great the second he walked. And here's how great he is.
Yeah, he's so good.
He can play Walter, and you don't give a shit, but then he sinks his teeth into the David character, and he's really fucking good.
Yeah.
He's actually better than the goddamn aliens.
Yeah.
And that's what's so frustrating and weird about this movie, is because we get to David, and there's lots of conversations about, existence and so on and so forth. And some of it's interesting and some of it's not.
Yeah.
Fassbender chews up the scenery.
Of course.
One thing leads to another, and we get the actual xenomorph from the original Alien. I won't go into the gory details.
It's gory.
And it is gory.
Very, very gory.
But it doesn't matter. In all this time, there's lots more smart people making stupid decisions. Tons and tons of them that make no sense. And eventually you get to the aliens, and at that point, I actually wanted more of David. Like, I didn't care about the aliens. First of all, they're all CGI. They're too fucking CGI.
Yeah.
There's a couple quick moments where they're not CGI, and it works so much better.
Yes.
Did you notice that?
Yes.
At the very end of the movie, there's a couple, they're trying to lure the alien in one place, and it comes out of a doorway, and it's obvious that it is a person in a suit, and it works 1,000 times better. I'm not saying this because I'm a child of the 80s and I saw a bunch of fucking rubber monsters when I grew up.
It's practicality.
It's practical. It's visceral. It looks like something that's in the same room with this person.
Right.
Because it is.
Right.
And it moves in a way that's organic.
Right.
These CGI creatures, these directors, they get obsessed with making CGI creatures, and some of them are cool, some of them are not. Spielberg knew this from the beginning with Jurassic Park. He knew this, and he was smart enough to use the CGI when he needed it. But when you have a close-up of the T-Rex going in to sniff Lex and Dr. Grant, it's a big fucking rubber head, because that makes sense.
Right.
You don't need CGI at that point.
Right.
And they do that in this movie, but they don't do it smartly.
The baby alien dancing bullshit that I was looking at when we were watching this fucking movie, like, are you fucking kidding me, Ridley Scott? Like,
oh my god,
god damn it,
with the hands, is
yes, he's praying.
Oh my god,
get the fuck out of here with that shit.
There's some real weird shit, like, we can't get into all of it. Like, this movie is so maddening because it goes from being very, very cool,
yes,
to very, very frustrating in the course of 10-15 seconds, and then back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Right, or you've got Michael Fassbender, deftly, I might add, and you've also mentioned it too, playing very different characters, essentially the same character, but very different characters.
Yeah.
Doing great, right? And then, I'm sorry, there's 10 people in this theater, and I will laugh out loud I'll do the fingering.
Yeah.
I'm like,
I know.
I'm like, all right, well.
Like, nobody fucking said anything about that?
I'm a 12-year-old boy.
I'll do the fingering?
I'm a 12-year-old boy laughing his ass off at Beavis and Butthead and shit. So you know, I was just kind of disappointed with the whole thing. I mean, you know, granted, I do like the fact that it's almost kind of this just weird alchemy that he David has discovered with this pathogen and the aliens, and I get it. Like, there was an article that I was reading about how really the cruxes of the Alien now 5 series, I don't know what it would be called, quadrilogy, the one after that, quintilogy. Have always revolved around humans, aliens, and synthetics. Yeah. And it was always the human part being Ripley, and Ripley was always a part of it, and now that has shifted to the synthetics with David and now Walter, and I guess that's where, you know, Ridley Scott is, you know, trying to himself extend the lifespan of this series by virtue of the fact that you are taking an immortal character in your movie, and you're, you know, kind of expounding on
which I do find interesting
their mythology. No, so
that part is interesting, but what suffers unfortunately is the aliens and the humans,
right? But again, when I'm watching this movie and it's just really slow and we're going through the same shit all over again, super kick-ass and exciting for like a good half hour, 35 minutes, yeah. Especially when Walter and David are, you know, discovering who they really are.
Yeah, there's some really interesting stuff in there.
Yeah, and then just to get back to the other thing, one thing that I will say is that there is a twist in this movie. I kind of half-heartedly was like, this is going to happen, right? But I wasn't shown it the way that I thought I was going to be shown it.
Well, wait a minute. We already said spoilers, and I'm not sure what you're talking about. Does it have to do with the droids?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like right before he knocks them both out, Tennessee... And what's her name? And she's asking, "Are you gonna help me build that cabin, Lloyd?"
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, you don't know, do you? Oh, that sucks.
Oh, you didn't see that until that moment.
No, I knew.
You sort of suspected it.
I just needed confirmation. Like, I was wanting to find out when she was going to find out, and I thought it was going to be happening like a lot sooner.
I didn't put it together halfway through the movie, but when I saw them fighting, and then there's no resolution to the fight, you gotta know, of course. But I actually knew it earlier. And it's a great moment when they show up on, and they first are talking to David, and he's got his long hair.
Yeah.
And he finds out that they've got a crew, they've got a ship up there with 2,000 human souls on it.
Right, right.
And he has this look on his face. Right. And it's really good. And this is the thing, once again, that's so goddamn frustrating about this movie. It has some great moments in it.
Right.
And maybe it's a movie that I'll like more over time. But I don't know. It ultimately is not as it's never going to be as satisfying as something like Aliens, because you're watching it for the first time. You keep getting the record keeps getting scratched by these fucking retarded decisions that the humans keep making.
Look,
and say what you will about Aliens, it's not a perfect movie. But there's no point where somebody makes a decision that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
No rational person would make that decision.
Right.
You can't write a script like that.
Same rules apply with what I'm complaining about here is that, listen, if they just listened to Ripley, then they would still all be alive, which is fine and all, but it's just compounded upon the fact that let's just take our helmets off, let's do this, let's do that whole thing. I go back to the other stupid decision that had been made in context of this. I went back and I watched Prometheus again. This is now the fifth time that I've seen this fucking movie, all right?
I've only seen 20.
I am so sick and tired of this goddamn shit because, look, dumb scientists, okay? What the hell is this? What did I write?
Were you high when you wrote this? Were you in the hospital on pain medicine?
Allegedly. So, yeah, I am, you know, the whole thing with, you know, going back and watching all these movies, and you've got Alien Resurrection and shit, man, Michael Wincott and Ron Perlman, Winona Ryder, Sigourney Weaver, Dan Hedaya, like, all these people are, like, fucking Prometheus has got Charlize Theron and Idris Elba, Guy Pearce, and, you know, he's all old and shit, but, you know, the whole thing with the father subplot with Charlize Theron and Guy Pearce, it's like all like weird soap opera-ish.
Yeah.
Oh, and just in case you don't understand what the fuck is going on, because clearly when I was watching it at the very, very beginning, at the first time that I saw it, like I had no idea what the hell was going on until Super Wonder Man, Idris Elba comes in. Let me tell you, my Tennessee accent, Here's a 45-second synopsis of what's been going on. They were making this shit off-site, away from their planet, so that they did not get infected, but they got infected. We gotta get the fuck off this planet right now. I'm gonna play you my little accordion that I got from Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I'm gonna bone Charlize Theron, Atomic Blonde over there. You know, as much as I love him, that was just infuriating.
No, it's just so, like, shameless exposition.
Can we agree that maybe Ridley Scott needs to not direct any more Alien movies?
Thank you. When you come away from watching the movie, the thing I came away with the most was, this is a movie made by someone who doesn't know what kind of movie he wants to make. Or anyway, doesn't know, isn't focused on the same thing that the audience is, which is it being entertaining. He's interested in his own things, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You do your own thing. And he's very good at those things.
Right.
But ultimately, if you're trying to make a movie for the fans of the series, which this is, it's kind of an origin story for the fucking Xenomorph. Ultimately. And it's a sad state of affairs that one of the biggest fans in the world of that, me, didn't give a shit. You're a pretty big fan, too.
I've seen all of them.
Did you give a shit about that origin story? Was it satisfying in any way?
I wish they would have dwelled on it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Or elaborated or extrapolated on it. I mean, seriously. Like,
it really does feel like a footnote, by the way.
You've traveled literally halfway across the goddamn universe to give me just, like, a little pithy 5-minute, like, whoop, that's a wrap. Here's what we got. We got, you know, kind of combination. And
you know what it felt like? It felt like Venom and Spider-Man 3.
Oh.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi, by all accounts, did not want Venom in the movie.
Yeah.
He was forced to put it in there by the studio or anyway convinced. And it feels like an afterthought. It feels like just half-assed. And that's what the Xenomorphs in this movie feel like. Like, Ridley Scott clearly wants to make another movie, but realized he couldn't. He couldn't just make a sequel to Prometheus. And I guarantee you, the studio said, all right, look, you can make a sequel, but you got to give us some fucking aliens.
Well, he said so in so many words. He was like, we wrote this specifically to address the issues that Prometheus had been giving our fans and critics, et cetera, et cetera. So, now... rank your Alien movies. Just the five. Don't even forget about Alien versus Predator.
I go pretty chronological, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd go totally chronological. I think I'd go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then when it comes to Prometheus and this, it's hard for me to say.
Covenant's better than Prometheus.
So that's my only switch up. It'd be 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 5.
Aliens, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection, Alien Covenant, Prometheus.
Yeah. I mean, everyone sort of agrees that even if you like 3 and 4, and even if you like Prometheus and Covenant, everyone sort of agrees that none of them are in the same. And I love 3 and I love 4, but I do not love them the same way. Like, I wouldn't, you know.
I have a better, man.
I wouldn't tell people that on the same level as Alien and Aliens.
I'd have to go back and watch Alien 3 again, because I've seen it, like, within the last couple months. Man, Alien Resurrection is actually...
fucking entertaining. That movie gets a really bad rap.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's probably more entertaining than Alien 3, just not as good of a movie, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. Okay. Yeah, the movie understands what it is. Like, that Jean-Pierre Jeunet understood what he was making, which is... I'm making a fucking alien movie here.
That's right.
So I'm going to start showing aliens. They're going to look really fucking cool. The aliens, by the way, have never looked cooler than they looked in Alien Resurrection.
That's right. I'm going to cast Lydia from Beetlejuice, Top Dollar from The Crow, and Hellboy, even before they're all popular. So
it's funny. It's entertaining. It's scary. Hey, by the way, we've got to talk about Catherine Waterson for a second here.
Okay.
I'm
going
to fucking talk about this.
Oh, wait a minute.
Catherine Waterson...
cries too much.
The Joel Kinnaman. And by the way, weird, because she did a movie with Billy Crudup, who was, you know, like, Joel Kinnaman and Catherine Waterston are basically taking their cues from his entire career, which is, all his career, people have been trying to make Billy Crudup happen. Like, I remember reading articles in, like, 98, 99 through probably about 2004 saying that Billy Crudup was going to be the next Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise.
I mean, he was a golden god, and then he was actually a blue god in Watchmen, so, you know.
That's right, Ozymandias, which was mentioned more than once in Covenant.
Dr. Manhattan.
Oh, that's right, Ozymandias is the other one.
Yeah.
But anyway, Billy Crudup was... Yeah. I read 1.5 million Entertainment Weekly and Premiere Magazine articles about how Billy Crudup was going to be the next Tom Cruise.
Right.
And it just never happened.
Right.
Like, and the same thing is now happening with Joel Kinnaman and several movies and TV shows, House of Cards, which we'll talk about.
We'll talk about it,
But Catherine Waterston is the same fucking thing.
Right.
Except I don't want to put Kinnaman and Watterson in the same category as Billy Crudup because I actually like Billy Crudup. But Joel Kinnaman is just a fucking dial tone of an actor. Like, just nothing.
When I think of him, I think of Doof.
Doof?
Doof. He's just a doof.
He is a doof. And Catherine Watterson is a doof, too.
I haven't seen... I think this may be the first time I've actually seen her in something that I can remember.
So...
Like, I had to go back and look up, like, what the hell is Catherine Watterson from? And then I was looking at my Twitter feed, and Mr. Skin popped up, and they were like, hey, she was completely naked in Hair and Vice. This is how bad that movie was. It was so bad, I didn't even remember that. I remember everything else.
A piece of shit.
Yeah, so...
P.T. Anderson's, like, went from the best director on the planet to the most overrated director on the planet in, like, 10 years. I think there's some actors and actresses who, like, for directors and casting directors and for just anyone in person, they seem very charismatic and they seem very talented and all this kind of stuff and really, like, own the room when you're in the room with them.
Sure.
But somehow it doesn't translate on film or anyway, for those two actors, it has not translated yet. Like, somebody must see something in Joel Kinnaman when he's in the audition. Because he keeps getting cast in Suicide Squad and House of Cards and all this other shit.
He's got a sex tape or something of some producer.
Like, big directors are into him. Catherine Watterson was in Inherent Vice by P.T. Anderson. She was like the main one of the main characters of the new Harry Potter movie.
Fantastic Beasts.
Wicca. She was in the Steve Jobs movie, so Danny Boyle was fucking nuts about her. And now Ridley Scott.
Right. She was the kid's mother.
Chris Ann. The ex of Steve Jobs. Yeah. And now Ridley Scott casts her in essentially the Ripley role. And that's the last thing maybe we need to say about Alien Covenant, which is there's a lot of effort, and you really hit on it, there's a lot of effort put into the droid story, almost none put into the aliens, and very, very little put into the humans in the movie. Was there anyone in this story that you cared about? And if you answer in the affirmative, I know the one character you might be talking about.
Tennessee.
The Danny McBride character.
Yeah.
Why do you care about him? Is it because we all love Danny McBride? No, he doesn't act... Well, that does have something to do with it if you like Danny McBride. However...
He doesn't acting like Danny McBride,
He's not though. Acting like Danny no. McBride. And I would argue that you care about him because you see his character go through events. You see he's got something to live for. He's the only real character that you get to watch go through some pretty emotional terrain.
I mean, honestly, if it's not for him, then this movie would be, you know, an hour shorter because everybody would be dead.
Right.
So.
Right.
Which would probably be a good thing. So we should thank him even more for trying to help us out at the very least.
You rate the movie on 0 to 10 scale.
Shit. 6. That's rather high.
Feels about right.
That's like 5 or 6.
Will you watch it again?
Yes. I have to because...
When they make Alien Nebuchadnezzar or whatever the next fucking one's going to be called.
Alien Hammurabi's Code. I've watched
Harambe? The fucking gorilla's going to be in this one?
Hey man, 1 year anniversary. Dicks out for Harambe. Hashtag dicks out for Harambe. May you rest in peace. On the real thing, I'm more like radio.com. Listen, if I've watched Prometheus 5 times, I guess I'm not
watching... I can't believe you watched that movie 5 times.
I went back and I was like, look, it can't... It's like my Suicide Squad. It can't be as bad as I remember. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It totally is. Like, I'm picking shit out even without the honest trailer or the caricatures or any of that sort of thing. So
ultimately, I'd say if you're a fan of the Alien movies, watch it. You'll enjoy it. If you're not a fan of the Alien movies, I can't see how this movie has anything for you. Like, if you're just like, I don't really care, don't see it. If you just don't really care about the Alien... MVP of this movie? Fassbender.
Fassbender's always going to be good.
No fucking doubt. Like, he chews up scenery, and he makes... me interested in a story that I'm previously not interested in.
You think he gets the best supporting actor nod?
I was thinking that when I was watching it because he's so fucking good in it. Yeah. Like, it can't be overstated how good he is in this movie. And I wasn't, like, dying to see more about his character.
No.
But...
It was interesting. It was definitely interesting.
And I'm actually wrong when I say that the only character we care about is Tennessee because I actually care about the David character.
Yeah.
It's not that I want him to win. I care about him because I'm interested in him. He's fascinating.
Right.
And... I know we're trying to move on. Last thing I'll say about the movie. The movie's a little dark. It's got a pretty dark ending.
Yeah, it's got an edge.
And it's got a... And it's kind of... Does make you want to see what happens in a third movie.
Harsh truths that most people probably don't want to hear. Especially when it comes to the concepts of mortality. And finding your maker. Finding your creator. And what to do with that knowledge after you find out.
Right.
But you cannot ask a question... like that and expect it to just, you know, be left alone or not have people invested into it when you're only giving 15 minutes.
Yeah. 20 minutes. You give it a very small amount of your energy. But it's pretty rare that a character as evil, an extremely evil character...
Say evil, I say pragmatic.
Well, maybe so.
But we don't have enough to talk about because I didn't put the goddamn part in the motherfucking movie, Chris.
It's pretty rare that a character that is this, ambiguous gets a win, like gets the dub like he does at the end of this movie. It's pretty fucking fascinating to see what they could potentially do with a third movie. I'll fucking be seeing this movie on opening day next time because I'm that curious about that storyline.
Yeah.
Too bad it wasn't contained in a better movie.
Yeah. One thing that you were right on, Chris.
Yeah.
So that we can...
I said this was going to be a disappointment.
Yeah, you said that was going to be a dud. You also... You said that Alien Covenant was going to be a dud. Dud-ish.
Yeah.
You also said that King Arthur... I haven't seen it. I know that you haven't either. No. I just want to make sure that you understand that apparently had King Arthur had cost about $175 million, it will not break even. It stands to lose about $150 million because it only made $15 million opening weekend and then just dropping from there. In fact, let me check the numbers.
Something I was reading the other day made an interesting point about this movie.
$3 million this past weekend.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I had no interest. I mean, I have interest in seeing it on cable or something like that, but I have no interest in paying $15 and going to the theater and seeing this.
Right.
Somebody made an interesting point about movies like this and Tarzan, which is they don't really have to pick the rights, right? Like, this stuff's like 200 years old or whatever, like these stories.
Yeah.
So there's not really any, like, you might not have to pay for the rights, and you also don't have to, it's like anything, you don't have to tell the public what this is about. The public's like, oh, it's a King Arthur movie.
Yeah.
But that sword cuts both ways, no pun intended, because the public's like, yeah, it's a King Arthur movie.
I don't give a shit.
I don't fucking want to see it.
You mean the Clive Owen Kieran Knightley one from 2004?
Pretty much what they said about Tarzan. They're like, oh, Tarzan? Yeah, I've seen it. Fucking Christopher Lambert.
Shit. Yeah, so anyway, you were right about that, so good on you for getting some...
That didn't take fucking Nostradamus to see that one coming.
Well, how about this? How about we talk about some stuff that we've also seen recently, or actually you saw recently.
Stuff we've seen recently.
I mean, it doesn't have the same ring of significant death.
No, it doesn't.
War Machine, the new Brad Pitt movie that is currently on Netflix.
Yeah.
You saw it.
I did see it. I'm super excited to see this because I love sort of social satire type things, which is what this is.
Yeah, like Wag the Dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything that's shitting on the government. Like, I'm totally in.
I love to shit on the government.
Yeah.
Especially when I work for the government.
So it's a sort of a social satire. It's like kind of it's basically like a little movie about Stanley McChrystal, who was the head of the armed forces in Iraq or Afghanistan for a time.
Okay.
And Iraq. And it's like a thinly veiled kind of farce about the military in Afghanistan in the, 2000, the early 2000s, or late 2000s rather.
Okay.
Yeah, 2010, whatever the fuck.
Okay.
And it's straight to Netflix. Brad Pitt plays the Stanley McChrystal character, but his name is Glenn McMahon. And it's got Tilda Swinton and Anthony Michael Hall and Topher Grace. So it's basically Brad Pitt's the only actor that anybody gives a shit about that's in this movie.
Right.
Tilda Swinton's in it for like a fucking sneeze. Like, you will miss her if you turn, or if you go make yourself a drink and come back. You won't see Tilda Swinton in this movie.
Oh, wow. So she basically like Franco'd it in. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's not quite that bad. But,
okay.
She is on fire.
Okay.
No, just kidding. I found it to be a disappointment. I didn't find it to be terribly funny.
Okay.
I thought it was insightful, had some interesting stuff to say about government, and particularly the military, as it pertains to Afghanistan.
Okay.
And just kind of like the disparity between what the government's trying to do and the methods in which they try and do it when we overtake a country, and how, counterterrorism and anti-insurgency and that kind of stuff's ultimately very ineffective.
Yeah, counterproductive.
Counterproductive. But the form in which they try to tell the movie, for me, was not successful. And what I mean by that is, the movie's pretty straightforward. It's meant to be satirical or farcical, but it's fairly straightforward and fairly grounded in reality. None of the characters are too over the top or anything like that.
Okay.
It's more in line with something like In the Loop, like the.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit in that territory, as far as just like a bunch of like a lot of these people are they're intelligent, they know what they're doing, but they're fucking idiots, you know. Like,
right.
And but then you've got the Brad Pitt character. The Brad Pitt character playing Stanley McChrystal or Glenn McMahon in this case is from another movie.
Okay.
Like, he is George Clooney in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Or he is...
Aldo Raine from Inglourious Basterds?
Aldo Raine from Inglourious Basterds, or Jack D. Ripper from Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Okay.
Almost
cartoonish? It sounds like
cartoonish. Yeah, okay. He's over the top, which is fine, because, you know, Brad Pitt has done that in other movies, and it's funny. But
when other people are doing it around
when
with
other
them.
People are doing
it
around when it belongs in the movie.
Yeah.
And in this case, it is jarring in the way that it does not work.
Is it because of the accent? Is it because of what he's
not,
doing, saying?
It's
I mean,
not his performance. It's the fact that no one else in the movie is doing a performance anywhere like that. Like, he's literally feels like it's from a different movie. Like, he thought they were making Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He thought they were making a Coen Brothers movie, and they were making In the Loop.
Yeah.
And it feels, and I don't know if that was an intentional choice between him and the director and the filmmakers, or if it was something that he showed up and he was like, I want to do it this way, and they just sort of went with it, but it is jarring. I would suggest you watch, you know, 20 minutes of the movie, and you'll understand what I mean.
Okay.
And maybe you'll like it, like our friend Brian Castaneda did, or maybe you won't, and you'll at least just understand what I meant. Brian felt very differently. He thought it was successful. I didn't think it was successful. I thought it would have been more successful. I probably could have dealt with that disparity between his performance and the rest of the movie if it contained jokes, which it really just kind of doesn't. And what jokes it does contain sort of fall flat. None of it's very funny. None of it's very insightful. It does have some interesting stuff to say, but it doesn't engage you in any way when you're watching it. Didn't me, anyway.
You ever see Hesher?
Yeah, I saw Hesher. David Michaud, yeah.
Yeah,
same,
he co-wrote...
Same yeah.
He also directed Animal Kingdom, which is a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Also with Guy Pearce.
And The Rover.
Didn't see that
also
one.
With Guy Pearce
yeah.
and Robert Pattinson. Good movie. This guy's a good director, and I applaud him for doing something that's a little bit out of his comfort zone.
Gotcha.
However, I wonder how much of a farce this movie would seem like if Brad Pitt was a little bit more grounded. Maybe the movie would be more boring. I don't know.
Right.
But ultimately, I didn't find it to work very well. I didn't find it to be very successful at what I think it was trying to do, which is be satirical.
Gotcha. Well, as we continue on the real thing on morelikeradio.com, we thank you for your patronage. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Hippo Juice is coming up next, ladies and gentlemen. And so we're at minute, I give it 52, 53. And so please make sure to stick around on morelikeradio.com for Hippo Juice. Chris, you and I have seen the first episode of House of Cards.
Hell yeah.
So now we can go back and talk about...
Joel Kinnaman.
Goofy McGooferton, or whatever I called him.
Did you call him Doof?
Doof, he's a doof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He fucking is.
And I will couple my assessment of the House of Cards episode with my watching of the movie The Fifth Element on the big screen again. That just happened like 10 or 12 days ago. I will preface it by saying that, look, we try not to be political on this fucking show.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. But when you are looking at President Frank Underwood...
Yeah. It's pretty hard.
And you're also looking at President Debo, Tiny Lester from The Fifth Element, and within 5 minutes of each of them opening their mouths, and they are way more presidential than our current hair director.
At a minimum, it's hard not to think about our current situation in the White House.
Yeah, but anyway, that was the other thing, too, is that, you know, it's... I know that I'm supposed to be watching this stuff for entertainment purposes and everything else, but when the plot lines from House of Cards... are really taking away actual things that are happening in the news, where you're kind of like, I don't want to hear about that. It makes me all kind of like, all nasty and shit.
You know it's true, because every time you see Spacey on a late night show, that's the exact question they're asking him. They're like, you guys have trouble? Like, and it's the same with the cast of Veep, by the way, too. Like, they're on a late night show, and it's like,
I got it.
You used to be way out of left field with the storylines. It's like, wow, that could never happen, but it sure is funny. Or in the case of House of Cards, it's like, wow, that could never happen, but it sure is entertaining or, you know, juicy. Now it's like, what else you got?
Right. and those characters, I might add, that have scripted lines. So yeah, I get it. It's not necessarily coming directly off the cuff or you know, being ranked, but they're just more coherent. Yeah. They use big words, the best words. All the words.
I have a good brain. You know, people are smart when they say the word brain and they have to point at their head. You know, brain. Points to head.
But I
also script it would be in the fucking brackets. But points to head.
But I also know too that this seem a little slowed down for you as far as pace is concerned? House of Cards?
Big time.
Okay, so I wasn't the only one that was thinking that, too. Like, it almost seemed like they kind of, like, pumped the brakes a little bit, just to get everyone...
Well, it seemed like they fucking ran out of script juice, like, in the middle, like, there just wasn't much happening. And also, they usually do a much better job. I guess they're assuming that everybody went back and binge-watched the whole show before they watched this episode, but I certainly didn't, and I never have with this series.
Yeah.
Like, I like House of Cards, but it's not on that level. Like, there's only so many fucking minutes in my life. Like, I can't watch every show in its entirety before the new season begins, you know? Like,
right.
They normally do a much better job of kind of easing you back into the show and kind of helping you along in terms of what's going on. There's a lot of references in this show. I'm like,
dude,
who the fuck was... Wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
Who was that?
I'm not going to do this like Game of Thrones. Like,
whose dick did they suck?
I'll even go back. Like, I went back and I watched the penultimate and the last episode of season one of Fargo. Just because, you know, yeah. I had it in my mind. I was like, oh, man, I remember that. That show's so goddamn good.
Yeah.
Martin Freeman, Billy Bob Thornton.
Season one better than season two.
But, yes.
We're agreeing about that.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. But I'm never going to do that with this because,
I probably should have watched, like, a YouTube recap or something like that. Because there's a lot going on.
They had Oh, this is the other thing. This fucking pissed me off, too. Hippo Juice is coming up next, by the way. Real thing. More like radio.com. So I'm going back, and I'm looking... It's on Netflix, right? So I'm looking at the previously on House of Cards.
Right.
I accidentally fast-forwarded through the recap. There was, like, I swear, like, another 2.5 minutes. But then I can't go back and watch the recap.
You can't.
So I'm like... Shit! So I'm like,
I needed that recap, and I didn't watch it either. I skipped it.
No,
I needed that fucking recap because you're watching this show. It is a lot slower than you're sort of used to. These are 13 episode seasons, right? House of Cards.
Yeah, 12, 13,
something like that. Yeah, there's a lot that happens, and every season of House of Cards, like, I don't think that House of Cards has ever had a season like Game of Thrones had a season last season. You know what I mean? Which is like. You get, like, two or three sort of throwaway episodes, and then it's just fucking balls to the wall, like, every episode. Or, you know, I would say 80% of the episodes in a season is fantastic. And Game of Thrones had a couple seasons like that. At minimum, they've had seasons where it's, like, 60% of the episodes are badass. Every season of House of Cards has been kind of... The trajectory of the show is really good the first couple episodes... A little bit of bullshit in the middle, and really good at the end.
Yeah.
And every season of House of Cards has been that way. Now we're getting an opening show that was like...
Okay.
Yeah, all right. So I'm interested to see what the trajectory is. Like, season two, obviously, probably the most shocking episode ever.
Yes.
Like, season two, episode one, right, is when Zoe got pushed in front of the goddamn train.
Right.
Like, that was one of those moments where, like...
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean, you see lots of, like, there's some shows like Game of Thrones, another example. Like, you're sort of waiting for shit to happen. Like, you know something's gonna happen, because this show's just fucked you over too many times.
Right.
That moment in the first episode of the second season of House of Cards, nobody fucking saw that coming.
Right.
Like, everybody, like, spat their fucking wine across the room while they were watching the show, because it was like... What the fuck?
Yeah. Well, he's like, and you know, you go back to, you know, you're referencing Game of Thrones, you know, other shows and that type of thing. Like, you know, obviously, you know, Frank Underwood is kind of like David from the Alien series now.
Yeah.
He's like the person that you root for, even though you really technically shouldn't be rooting for them. He's the anti-hero.
Yeah.
But all I know is that in Game of Thrones and the, you know, Watched with the Girlfriend and other people, like, I know that I've never been emotionally invested in any of these people on House of Cards because they're just awful, awful people.
Yeah,
as opposed to Game of Thrones where you're like, oh, fuck, I can't believe this person, such and such person died, or this person's going to get what they deserve. Yes, yeah. Or like, you know, exalting and all that sort of thing. It's never been that type of show with this. It's very dark and really doesn't give a fuck what you think, honestly. I guess it kind of works in its favor because it's basically the modus operandi for Frank Underwood, especially when he starts breaking the fourth wall. I was just a little bit underwhelmed by this first episode.
I was too. You weren't alone there. I mean, and I've never really felt that with this show. You kind of know what you're getting.
Yeah.
And it has a kind of a pace that's always pretty much in the same. The pacing is pretty much the same. Like, one episode might be better than another, but the pacing works in the exact same way. This one, I mean, I was actually looking, like, you know, you're watching a show and you hit the pause button or you hit the up-down button to see where you're at in the show. Like,
yeah.
Where are we at in this show? Like 20 or 30? Where are we?
Shit, we got 20 more minutes of this fucking
thing? I started doing that at minute, like, 19.
Ooh.
Like, we weren't very far into this show.
Yeah.
And I started checking, you know, basically looking at my watch.
Yeah.
Like, that's not good.
Yeah.
So hopefully that trend doesn't continue. Do you binge watch shows? Like, is there any show that comes out and that drops all at the same time, like this? Like, I've never, like, House of Cards premieres and I watch the whole thing inside of 1 week. Like, it's gonna take me fucking 6 weeks to watch this thing.
I think we're probably not going to be as
vigilant.
Guns blazing when it comes to this particular season, simply because of the fact that we've got other stuff that we're doing. I think the last show that I actually binge watched was Rick and Morty. Because of the whole April, but they're 20-minute episodes.
And that also didn't all drop at once. Like, it didn't just drop when you watched it. You were catching up on it.
An accumulation. I had never seen any Rick and Morty episodes, and now I've seen all the Rick and Morty episodes.
Right.
And so with this, I think actually the last show that I did binge watch front to back was House of Cards.
Front to back.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that's the right way to go.
I mean, if you're writing a book about the president, you've got to go front to back.
That's right. Place of shit.
Joe Don Baker and all that. No, I mean, it's just, I'll watch it when I can in order to not be just having to invest time later on with just a glut of episodes. You know, maybe like 2 or 3 episodes a clip.
Sure.
But that's about it.
There's also a problem when these shows fucking just shit out 13 episodes like this,
right,
which is like the clock's, now the button got hit on the clock until you get something spoiled for you.
Right, exactly.
It's all out there now.
Right. Well, shit, I'm surprised that I was even able to last this long prior to me watching Split.
I'm surprised by that, too.
Or Get Out, and it was literally a week after.
Not even a week after you saw the movie, we started getting articles that were just openly talking about the
sequel. Hey, it's about Unbreakable. Hey, we're going to do a sequel to that. I'm like, oh, shit. So I dodged a bullet there.
Movie Split. You liked it, right? Split.
It was all right.
It was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
I mean, when it comes to these types of things, there's pros and cons, obviously. You gotta be, you know, somewhat in the realm of reality when it comes to, you know, I've got finite time.
Right.
Let's make it work.
We've talked about this before, like, I'm not above walking away from a show.
Sure.
Like, you have one bad season, and I'm like, fuck off. Like, I don't care. Like, this show got a lot of miles out of, hey, it's Kevin Spacey chewing up scenery.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's like, I've seen Kevin Spacey chewing up scenery.
Well, hasn't gotten into Walking Dead territory for me.
Oh, hell no. No.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, if I watch this whole thing, if I put this time into it and watch this whole thing.
Right.
You remember when you watched the fourth season of Arrested Development?
Yeah.
And you get to like episode 7 or 8, and you're just like,
I just gotta power through.
Do I have to power through?
Oh, you stopped. Did you stop?
No.
Oh, okay.
Actually, we did stop.
Oh,
my wife and I did stop.
My wife.
We did stop for like, I don't know, 3 weeks or something like that.
Not 2 weeks, 2 weeks.
2 weeks. We stopped for a couple weeks, and then we got back into it, and we did finish it. We didn't stop because we hated it. We just, something other shit was going on.
Yeah.
New shit had come to light. But no, I mean, that could happen. You know, if it keeps up with this pace, I'm walking away from this motherfucker.
Eh, I mean, you should, because you've got finite time, and you've got kids. I don't.
Kids.
I've got sleeping, trying to recover from this back shit.
My kids don't listen!
Then my Aunt Bundy just fell down the steps.
Shut up, bitch!
Almost every year. As we move on to the real thing, more like radio.com. Chrissy did not know about any of this stuff prior to me talking about Wonder Woman and Alamo Drafthouse.
Mm.
You have no context about what I was mentioning.
Alamo from Sesame Street.
Not Alamo from Sesame Street.
Mm.
Per NPR, Alamo Drafthouse is not a typical corporate movie chain for a horror movie screening this week. Gave patrons gas masks and took them by school bus out into the woods for one of their movies, which was, let's see, Birth, Movies, Deaths. That's loading up. Okay, so we'll continue.
I thought it was for Wonder Woman. I was like, whoa, movies taking a different direction than I thought it was going to go in.
Gas masks and drove them out into the woods for a showing of It Comes at Night.
Ooh.
Right? That's pretty cool. They also showed the latest Pirates of the Caribbean flick on a boat. So when the Draft House announced last week that to celebrate the release of Wonder Woman, it was going to offer a woman's only screening, I say screening one, singular, at its downtown Austin location.
Location.
It didn't sound that all that edgy. Quote from Alamo Drafthouse.
A big fucking deal.
The most iconic superheroine in comic book history finally has her own movie, and what better way to celebrate than with an all-female screening. Apologies, gentlemen, but we're embracing our girl power and saying no guys allowed for one special night at the Alamo Ritz. And when we say people who identify as women only, we mean it. Everyone working at the screening, venue staff, projectionists, culinary team, will be female, so last your girlfriends together and grab your tickets to this celebration of one of the most enduring and inspiring characters ever created, and quote, innocent enough until you know what's going to happen. Mm. What's going to happen?
I'm guessing some fucking butthurt dudes were like, oh, hey, I get to have a screening with all women. Maybe we can have a screening with all men.
Yes, and on the actual...
This is in Texas, by the way.
Yeah.
Boys.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so...
It is Austin, but it's still Texas.
And so apparently there were comments that were just being riddled on the Facebook page for Alamo Drafthouse. One person...
It does sound like you're saying Elmo, by the way.
Alamo. The Alamo.
I can't picture anything but Elmo.
There is no basement in the Alamo. I refer you to Katy Perry, William and Elmo t-shirt. So, Bill Fairbrother, have you ever hosted a men's only showing of any film? Alamo Drafthouse Austin. We've never done showings where you had to be a man to get in, but we did show the Entourage movie a few years ago. Drafthouse. Will there be a male-only screening for Thor Ragnarok, or a special screening of it that's only for those who identify as clowns? We might actually have to steal that clown idea. Thanks, Ryan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good
so,
for Alamo Drafthouse answering back with some shade. I hope they're still fucking doing the female...
they are. In fact, they added a second women's only screening, which, like the first, also sold out.
Good for them.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. Like, when I saw that, I was like, you know what? Can you just let them have the fucking thing? This is someone mentioned, not my comment, someone else mentioned, like, these are the same fucking D-bags, because they're not as strong as actual douchebags, so I won't give them that. But they're the ones that complain about ladies now. Okay, fine. Like, these people have never been laid in their entire life, apparently, and here's proof positive why. I just thought it was really funny.
Like, do you give a shit?
Is this the
do you really want to go see Wonder Woman on an all-dudes night? Like, right. Is that your thing?
Yeah, so they're going to complain and not complain about Star Wars because the last two movies that have Star Wars heroines, not heroes, heroines, main characters. So, anyway.
God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, on the other hand,
whew,
the reviews...
been pretty good.
Really good. Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, like, the last couple of years, a movie comes out, Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever it is, and they compare it to the superhero movies the last couple of years. So they're like, oh, it's fun, like Iron Man, like, you need to go see this, blah, blah, blah. They're comparing this movie to, like, the Christopher Reeve Superman. Like, that's a deep pull as far as comparisons go.
97% on Rotten Tomatoes so far.
Yeah, and early reviews, like, when you just look at a number like that, like, it can be a little bit, it can be a little bit deceiving. But if you go and you read the reviews from reputable reporters or journalists from, you know, Variety and Hollywood Reporter and Michael Phillips and stuff like that, and they just have nothing but glowing things to say about the movie. It's upbeat. It doesn't have any of this downtrodden, like, serious, fucking, like, furrowed brow dude in tights kind of shit that all these other movies have.
Yeah.
Patty Jenkins, by the way, how weird is it? Like, this chick made Monster in 2004. And then now, all of a sudden, 13 years later, she's got this movie that's, like, poised to be a massive hit. Like,
hey, man,
like, totally Like, I'm glad she made this movie and she did a great job and everything, but, like, on paper, like, she seems pretty unqualified to make this movie.
Right.
She's been doing TV since then and stuff like that, but,
Well, I mean...
Good on you, Patty Jenkins.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, it's, okay, look, it's... Let me look.
Gal Gadot, by the way, too.
Gal Gadot's smoking
hot. Holy shit.
First summer tentpole superhero film directed by a woman. First woman to direct a superhero film with a female protagonist. First female protagonist movie? Superhero?
No.
Elektra? That's no. That's the only other one I can think of. I can't think of any other one.
Catwoman.
God.
Yeah.
Man, well, it's clearly going to be better than those two. Because...
Not to fucking get off the whole feminism kick here, but can we get back to how hot Gal Gadot is? Seriously. She's the kind of hot that's, like, confusing, you know? Like, you look at her and you just, like, have to make this face like... Holy shit.
God damn, you're really hot.
What the fuck?
Like, can I tell you how hot you are without...
How is this possible?
Please don't get mad with me telling you how.
My eyes are all squinted Franco style. I'm like, what?
Oh,
what?
That was the comparison I was trying to make before. Patty Jenkins, like, kind of a weird choice, but, you know, Jon Favreau, when I saw him in Maid and
yeah.
Swingers, like, you wouldn't think, like, oh, so now you've made Iron Man, you've made Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Huge fucking grosses across the board.
But Favreau kind of worked himself up to it, like a pinky getting into a beehole, you know? Like,
yeah.
he fucking, like, just squoze himself in there. Like, he started making stuff. Like,
I squoze them myself.
I squoze them myself. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Gene. I think you need to work on that. Hey.
He started making stuff like Maid, and then he, like, got up to, like, you know, bigger budget with Elf, and then he made Zathura, you know, which has got a little action element to it.
Yeah.
And then he got Iron Man, which was a property that's sort of been kicking around for a long time, and was kind of considered at the time, it's hard to think of it now, but it was considered at the time to be kind of a third-tier property, like, most people weren't even that all that familiar with Iron Man. And then now he's making, more Iron Man movies and Jungle Books and Lion Kings and stuff like that. But
right.
Patty Jenkins is like, all right, I'm going to make one movie about a female serial killer in Florida. The movie's made in 2004. Like 13 years later, you don't hear any other movies from her. And then all of a sudden she's making what could be the biggest movie of the fucking year. Probably not because Star Wars comes out. But it could be the second biggest movie of the year.
Projected to make $77 to $105 million opening weekend.
No, they're going to have my money. My fucking daughter wants to see it. It's 2.5 hours long, by the way. God damn.
Yeah.
Why is everything gotta be 2.5 hours long?
Ah, man.
Jesus.
It's an origin story, man. Everyone's gotta know. I honestly don't.
I don't know.
I don't know anything about Wonder Woman. I'm gonna be very, very honest. In fact, the only things that I really know about it are from...
The reviews?
The reviews. This movie that I'm going to go see, Injustice 2, which I bought, play on PS4. And even that's kind of a weird story to go, but... you go low end or high end with those projections? 77 or 105?
I go high end. I think they're underestimating. I think they're gonna make more money than that, especially with this early buzz. I think it'll be more on the 100 side.
110?
Maybe more. I'm gonna go totally unprecedented and go like 120 here.
120?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna go 110. You heard it here first. On The Real Thing. More like radio.com.
We'll see.
That's right. And as we wrap up on The Real Thing, Jesus, Chris. Significant deaths. It's time.
Significant deaths.
For significant deaths. And quite a lot of significant deaths, as a matter of fact. Four, I might add.
Mm.
Michael Parks.
Oh.
Born Harry Samuel Parks. Died May 9th of this year. He had appeared in later years with his work collaborating with Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, and Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty sad. But, you know, he's one of these actors. The first time I ever saw him was from Dusk Till Dawn. Like, I know fucking film geeks out there are like, what the fuck? He was in a million movies.
Yeah,
he fucking wasn't. He was in some fucking, like B-70 movies that you like and Quentin Tarantino likes. But most of the world didn't know who the fuck he was.
Right.
We learned who he was in from Dusk Till Dawn. But he's one of these guys that I saw him in From Dusk Till Dawn, and I thought, oh, that guy's going to die soon. he looked like he was about to die when he was leaning on that counter at the beginning of From Dusk Till Dawn. The fact that he made it as long as he did, and he's like squatting over the bride and Kill Bill and all this kind of stuff.
Tall glass and cocksucker still alive.
Still alive. And I always think of him, I think of Esteban from Kill Bill, more than I think of those other two performances, though, because, you know, I mean...
Yes, Chris. Buenos dias, Esteban.
It's Tarantino said that he wanted to put his money where his mouth is and give him a role that, you know, he could really sink his teeth into. He plays two different parts in that movie, which is kind of cool. And it's very, very good. Very kind of, you know, sort of creepy as Esteban, you know.
You ever see Red State?
I did see Red State. He's good.
You ever see Tusk?
Good movie. I did not see Tusk.
But he was also in Grindhouse. And he actually played the same role from Kill Bill in Grindhouse.
And essentially the same role from Dusk Till Dawn.
Pretty much.
Texas Trooper, you know. Which is fun. Yeah. I've been meaning to see Grindhouse again. I need to see that. Planet Terror, right? He was in Planet Terror, or was he in, what's it called?
I think he was in...
Death Proof?
Death Proof.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I have been meaning to watch those two movies again. I need to check those out.
I've
literally seen them both once. I've never seen them again since we saw them in the theater.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since, honestly. Yeah, in fact, I've seen the commercials for fake movies more than I have seen...
Yep.
Do. If you are thinking of walking into this podcast...
Thanks.
All... Dark meat. All be carved. Powers Booth.
Ooh.
Chris Whedon. Died May 14th, 2017.
Well...
Most notable for several things, in fact, not the least of which recently he was, I didn't know he's in the Avengers, but he was in the Avengers. Did you know that? Because he was.
Yep.
He was also Curly Bill in Tombstone.
Oh, hell yeah.
He was also President Noah Daniels on 24. You ever see 24?
I've never seen an episode of 24.
Neither have I.
But I think of him, I think of Frailty.
So, oh, that's right.
He was the cop in Frailty.
Yes, he was. Ugh. Yeah.
Great in that movie.
Also in Sin City.
It's great when an actor dies and you've got this wonderful gif of them going, well, bye. You know, like, that's the age we're living in. Like,
oh, shit. And he was in one of your favorite movies.
Which one?
MacGruber!
He was in MacGruber, yeah.
MacGruber!
Jesus. That's true. That's true. Thank you, Colonel.
doesn't Powers Booth also in...
He's pointed something in the room and I'll fucking stick it up my
head. Powers Booth, by the way, one of those actors that I think is perfect for just being a bad... If you need a bad guy,
he
was your dude. Yeah. Like J.T. Walsh.
All those movies you just named, he plays
like fucking terrible, shitty action Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, Sudden Death. I don't care. Powers Booth, he's taking over Pittsburgh Penguins Stadium. He's gonna kick ass. So,
yeah, like not a guy that you think of being in, you know, too many Adam Sandler movies or anything like that, unless he was playing the bad guy.
Right. But he was also nominated for a Screen Actors Guild Award for Outstanding Performance by a Cast in a Motion Picture for his work in Nixon 95.
Did he play Alderman?
Alexander Haig?
No, Alexander Haig. Okay.
And that was the movie he did after Sudden Death, before Con Air. So there you go. That's right.
Hell yeah.
That's right. The third significant death, not necessarily of a anybody that was an actor, but he had been in movies, and he actually had been used for his talents in movies fairly recently. I think he did the title song for the movie The Promise with Christian Bale and who's the guy from Star Wars?
Oscar Isaac.
There you go. Now that isn't that bad.
The Armenian genocide.
That's right. That's right. Chris Cornell.
Oh.
Passed away May 18th, 2017. Two-time Grammy winner, found a frontman for Soundgarden, sang for Temple of the Dog, and
he hung around for a while.
And also Audioslave. Yeah. Look, when you go back, you listen to like Super Unknown and every single song. Like Suicide, 4th of July, like, oh, Jesus, like, man, just, like, lay it on really thick, right?
I know.
But I mentioned it because not only was he technically an actor in the 92 movie Singles, of which he also contributed his song Seasons for that movie, he also did a James Bond song, You Know My Name, from Casino Royale.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes, he did.
You know, I've never been the biggest Soundgarden fan in the world, although they do have some songs... that I love. And by the way, there's a great movie called Pacific Heights with Matthew Modine and Melanie Griffith and Michael Keaton playing a bad guy. Really good movie by Schlesinger, the guy that made Midnight Cowboy.
Okay.
Anyway, There's a scene in that movie where Michael Keaton shows back up as a bad guy. Pretty creepy movie.
Yeah.
Matthew Modine is watching the video for Hands All Over by Soundgarden, which is a great fucking Soundgarden song.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's like kind of a movie moment that he's involved in.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of the, kind of a great moment in the movie where he's watching the video for this song. You get to see this scene set to that song, actually, this great Soundgarden song. It's not really movie related, but I gotta say, like, Chris Cornell, as much as I'm not the biggest Soundgarden fan, there's a handful of songs of theirs that I absolutely love, including that one. His fucking voice was by far the best voice of that generation. Like, in terms of just pipes, like, Kurt Cobain's voice is distinctive, and Eddie Vedder's voice is very warm, and I like it very much,
yeah.
And, you know, all that kind of stuff, and Lane Staley, his real unique kind of growl. Chris Cornell was the most, like sort of blessed with just fucking natural pipes, like,
and you know,
unbelievable.
And you know what you need to do with that voice? You need to be in a rock band. You need to be singing. He also did a whole bunch of solo albums as well.
It's weird, like, to, like, choke yourself, you know, like, when you've got a voice, you know, like,
yeah.
It's a weird way for a singer to go out. Literally, like, crushing your windpipe.
Well, especially when you've been asked time and time again about your friends, your contemporaries, and their own suicidal attempts and or suicidal completions, as well, you know, Kurt Cobain.
Successes.
Also. Yeah. And, you know, he apparently did a song in a tribute to Jeff Buckley, and he fucking died in the Mississippi River. I mean, so that was tragic as well. And, like, this whole thing was...
That was a fucking accident.
Well, yeah, that was. But I mean, even still, I mean, with the whole Kurt Cobain thing, and like nearly all of your songs are about dark, depressing shit. And I literally saw them not 2.5 weeks before this shit actually happened. So when I'm like, you know, waking up and Damon, aka the American Dream, is like, dude, Chris Cornell died. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm like, scrolling, like, what the fuck?
That's well, I had the same experience, except it was you that told me.
Yeah.
You can make fun of, you know, Soundgarden or say that you don't like them, which I'm not the hugest fan. Like, if they've got 200 songs, I probably only like 15, you know? And, like, then there's bands like Audioslave, which just seems like a huge fucking joke. And then after both those bands, he, like, did an acoustic set. I don't remember what it was, but there was a DVD of it or a CD, and, like, it was televised. And he sang all those Soundgarden songs that I don't give a shit and all those Audioslave songs that I don't give a shit about. And you hear him just with a guitar singing those songs, you're like, I kind of fucking like that song.
Yeah,
like,
right?
This dude's got a fucking amazing voice. Like, unreal, just God-given, if you believe in that sort of thing, talent.
Yeah.
You know, just, like, blessed.
Yeah. So, he will definitely be missed.
Not anymore, though.
Yeah. First band I ever saw.
Really?
Yeah.
I never saw him.
So, he died, and then the final significant death. Sir Roger George Moore, to us common folk, died May 23rd, 2017, best known for playing Secret Agent James Bond in 7 films. Also, I didn't know this until I heard it on NPR, he was the original Simon Templar from the television series The Saint, which ended up becoming a movie that was with Val Kilmer, 97.
Yeah, it's kind of sad because... I think he's probably considered in almost everyone's eyes to be, like, the least interesting James Bond, right?
Is it really?
I think so. I mean, like George Lazenby doesn't count, does he? I mean, they made one fucking movie.
I mean, I've never seen On Her Majesty's Secret Service, but I've also been told that that was actually, like, exactly what Ian Fleming
supposed
was...
supposed to be, like, the most, like,
as
accurate...
close to, like, Ian Fleming's vision of James Bond as he wanted.
I haven't seen it either because I don't give a fuck about James Bond movies.
Right.
I don't even like the new James Bond movies with Daniel Craig. Like, I'm not nuts about those. Like, Skyfall was okay.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, when I saw Casino Royale, like, everyone was like, oh, you gotta fucking see it. It's like a whole new James Bond thing.
Yeah.
And they're, like, strapping him to a chair and, like, fucking beating his nutsack up and all this kind of stuff. And, like, I'm like, I don't fucking care. It's, like, the same sort of thing. Like, I know this character's not gonna die. He's not gonna be in any real danger. Story is not all that interesting. Like, he's going to achieve the unattainable, and he's going to rescue the girl, and blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm not a fucking James Bond fan. Certainly not going to watch one called Octopussy with some embarrassing fucking, like, super, super cringy special effects from 1977.
So out of all, out of these that I name, you let me know if you've actually seen them or not. Live and Let Die.
No.
The Man with the Golden Gun.
Mew.
The... Boss, I kind of like it here. Thank you for that Hot Fun reference. The Spy Who Loved Me.
Nope.
Moonraker.
No.
For Your Eyes Only.
I don't think I've seen any fucking Roger Moore James Bond movies.
I've seen A View to a Kill.
That's the one with Walk-In, right?
That's the one with Walk-In. Yeah, with Grace Jones, with Duran Duran.
Yeah.
A View to a Kill. That's the first Bond movie that I can remember watching.
The first one I can remember watching was License to Kill.
Yeah.
Timothy Dalton.
Yes, with Benicio Del Toro as the bad guy, right? Colombian terrorists?
Oh, yeah.
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 I read a couple of BuzzFeed articles.
Del Toro? I didn't know that. I was like fucking 10.
I think he's like one of the henchmen or something like that.
Huh.
Yeah. But it was also told in the article that it was like one of the best 90s movies, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, Timothy Dalton made two of them. He made License to Kill, and then he made
The Living Daylights.
The Living Daylights. One of them is considered to be very good. The other one is not.
Yeah, and apparently from what I was, you know, listening on NPR, that Roger Moore was originally supposed to be James Bond, but he had commitments that he had had with the show The Saint, so he couldn't, which means the role was given to Sean Connery, kind of sort of like when Pierce Brosnan was being approached to do James Bond back in the 80s, but he was still committed to Remington Steele, and so they get, you know, Roger
right.
Moore.
It went Sean Connery, Roger Moore, Sean Connery, Roger Moore. Because Sean Connery came back and made one called Never Say Never Again or some shit like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they went back to Roger Moore, and then it was Timothy Dalton, and then, you know, everybody knows where it goes from there. Pierce Brosnan, and then Daniel Craig, and then hopefully Idris Elba soon.
Yeah, it could happen, man. It could happen.
I doubt it.
Yeah. Sir Roger Moore, he will be missed. Also made...
What a special tribute we just gave to him.
I mean, honestly, don't know. Look, yeah. From what I've been reading and from what has been said of him, he was just the nicest guy.
Yeah.
He even named his autobiography One Lucky Bastard, or I'm a Lucky Bastard, because
yeah.
He just, you know, very, very...
I like when celebrities are that way.
Yeah.
When they're constantly saying, like... somebody was telling me a story about how, like, Kevin Bacon got ripped off by Bernie Madoff, you know?
Yeah.
And he was in an interview saying, hey, I'm Kevin Bacon. I can make it back. I'm lucky. You know, yeah, I lost some money. This fucking douchebag took off with some of my money, but I'm Kevin Bacon. You know?
Right.
I'm going to be all right. Don't worry about me.
I'm sorry. There were a couple of books based on Roger Moore's life. One of them was called One Lucky Bastard. The other one's called My Word Is My Bond. There it is. Died of 89 of cancer. I mean, can you really say that you died of cancer if you're 89 years old?
I know. Right?
I mean,
it's
come on.
It's going to be something else.
Yeah, but you got
cancer and or tripping in the fucking kitchen.
Yeah, knighted in 99, had a lot of humanitarian work that he did with UNICEF.
Does the knighting thing really mean anything to anybody? Like, when you hear that, you're like, oh, okay, wow.
I would give more props to his
they
role.
Gave it to fucking Roger Moore, then.
I'll give him props for acting in the 1997 classic Spice World, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And also Boat Trip. Remember Boat Trip from 2002 when Cuba Gooding Jr. was still a thing? Yeah.
God, I went and saw Spice World at the movie. We worked at the movie theater, to be fair. I didn't pay for it.
I know. It came out the same time as Alien Resurrection.
Oh, yeah.
And it comes full circle.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So we will leave you. We started with A View to a Kill tonight. We will leave you with You Know My Name by Chris Cornell. As we wrap up on The Real Thing, more like radio.com style. Chris Whetton, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you thanking me for
being... We'll talk Wonder Woman next time.
Wonder Woman, you were going to watch it opening weekend, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My daughter's dying to see it.
120? I say 110.
120.
120.
I think it's going to make more than people are expecting. It's going to be a big, big surprise in terms of money.
That's right. One thing that is, it's obviously going to be surprising. Gal Gadot, super hot. Gal Gadot, if you're listening to this, you are smoking hot, and I don't understand.
What?
Confusing. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mark Newton.
You won't like what it is. When the storm arrives, would you be seen with me by the merciless eye?